Canto, Chapter 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the final two verses of the chapter. And for the benefit of our newer devotees, I'd like to give a little, like a description of how the beginning of the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, is set up. You need it? Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto has 19 chapters, and the first three chapters of the first canto, one could say, they're a summary of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. You can say the first canto is a summary of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam also. Because essential teachings are packed into the first canto. Prabhupada said, if you read and can understand the message of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that's sufficient for going back to Godhead. You don't need to read anything else, but first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and small thing, understand it, and another small thing is apply it, and sufficient to go back to Godhead. In the first three chapters, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is compressed in the form of questions and answers. There's six questions asked by the sages of Naimisharanya of Suta Goswami, and there's six answers. And so being college students, you know, you want to go right to the questions and the answers. So then you know the subject matter and you're master's level and you're ready for PhD. But there's something that happens before the questions and answers. There's very, very, very important and repeated theme within the first canto several times is how to properly receive transcendental knowledge. What's the qualification of one to receive transcendental knowledge, and what's the qualification of one to transmit it? So that's presented within the first chapter. First chapter is made up of invocation mantras that describe the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Paradharma. Hear ye, anybody who wants something less than Paradharma, you don't need to read further. We're kicking out all other forms of Dharma, Kaitava Dharma, where the essence is covered by ulterior motivations. Dharma that's pursued for material gain. Not going to be talked about. If that's what you want, you don't need to read anything more, because we're not going to talk about that. We're only going to talk about, in this literature, Param Satyam Dhimahi, fixing one's concentration upon the Supreme Absolute Truth through the process of the literature, describing and hearing and remembering. So, after those invocation mantras, then the qualifications of Sutta as the speaker, the son of Romaharshan Sutta, Sutta Goswami. Romaharshan Sutta, later it's described, he was a direct disciple of Vyasadeva, and when Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas, he entrusted the Puranic portion of the Vedas to Romaharshan, even his name indicates, his hairs would stand on end, just hearing the messages that Vyasadeva had entrusted him with. And his son was more qualified than his father. So the qualifications of a speaker, in short, rather than going into the detail, and the qualifications of the listener. The main qualification of the listener is the audience, the sages, is their eagerness to hear and their inquisitive spirit about paradharma, not how to get something in the material plane from the exchange for some religious practice. So they establish 6 questions in the first chapter, and then chapter 2 and chapter 3 are the answer, the response from Sutta to those 6 questions, and they're essence questions. Like one of those essence questions is a really good question. These sages say, in this age of Kali, that had just begun because Krishna had left, and after Krishna leaves, Dwarpa Yuga ends and Kali Yuga begins. And Kali Yuga has been going on for some time, and already it's very clear. Kali Yuga is just what the scriptures described, very bad. The disposition of people, or orientation of people towards spiritual life, will rapidly deteriorate. And whatever inclination they have for spiritual life, they're lazy. And if there's a little perk of interest, then they get misguided. And they're always quarreling, and above all, they're always disturbed. So, very, very difficult. Mandaksu manda matayu manda bhagya nupadrutha. Prayinau payu shakshabhyam. Kalavasmin yugejana. Very bad circumstance. So, how are people in this age going to understand the essence of the Vedas? They're not going to go through the whole range of the Vedas and very, very carefully extract the essence. They're not going to do that. Can you do that? Can you state really concisely what's the essence of all the Vedas, please? So, that's one of their questions. Good question. They have other questions. Please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear within this universe. Please describe why it is that He appears. And one of their questions is, another very good question, now that Krishna has gone, because when Krishna was present, just by the touch of His lotus feet upon the earth, everything was bountifully supplied. It was the whole abode of Krishna descended with Krishna. Then His presence and the abode of Krishna's presence, spiritual presence, transformed everything. It was so wonderful. But Krishna's gone. So now that Krishna's gone, what is to protect the principles of religion in this very, 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 very difficult age? What is going to uphold and support religious principle now that Krishna is gone? So, in part, it's very, in a literary sense, it's very appropriate that this question is asked, because then Sutta is going to describe the very unique position of Srimad Bhagavatam, because he's already done that in the invocation mantras. What this Bhagavatam represents. So, in the third chapter, nearing the end of the chapter, Suta Goswami says that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God for the sage of Kali, who had his compilation done by an incarnation of God, Srila Vyasadeva. In other words, not just a historian or an intellectual or a learned person, but an incarnation of God, Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva's in the category of Shaktyavesha Avatar, bearing the Lord's own personal potency for the purpose of compiling the Vedas. And he compiled specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam under the direction of Narada. As the incarnation of God, it is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. That's pretty good. Nikshayasaya lokasya dhanyam svastyayanam mahat. Then he described Vyasadeva delivered it to his son, Shukadeva Goswami, who is the most respected among the self-realized. We're going to find this at the end of this, the 19th chapter. Shukadeva Goswami makes his appearance. It's really dramatic because the stage has already been set where the sages for all the kingdom of Maharaj Parikshit, which represented the whole world, had come together, even from other planets had come to sanctify the disappearance of Maharaj Parikshit, is leaving his body because he'd been cursed to die in 7 days, and he had given up his kingdom and was preparing for death. So they came to personally experience it, but also give their blessings by their presence. So all those sages, I mean, the most qualified persons on this planet and from other planets, when Shukadeva Goswami came into the assembly by the bank of the Ganges, they had never seen him before because he had was just the born son of Vyasadeva and left to the forest. But just by his coming into their presence, immediately they all stood. 16-year-old boy, because they recognized just by his presence how qualified he was. You know what that's like when there's some extremely pious person, or you feel their presence, and this is the Vedic culture. They stood and just out of respect. And Shukadeva Goswami made an arrangement for his proper seating place, offered his obeisances, and again exhibited his qualification as a receiver by citing the glories of Shukadeva Goswami. So Vyas taught it to Shukadeva Goswami, the most respected amongst the self-realized, after extracting the cream of all the Vedic literatures and histories of the universe. So Vyas compiled it, taught it to his son. Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, in turn delivered the Bhagavatam to the great emperor Parikshit, who sat surrounded by sages on the bank of the Ganges awaiting death without taking food or drink, like the Leela of Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. For 7 days and seven nights, nobody ate, slept, drank water. It was like, you know, a long fast. But they were in ecstasy. For them, it wasn't a fast, it was a feast. It was Krishna's association. Who needs? So, Shukadeva Goswami, similarly, he'd taken this vow to fast until death, and he was fasting. And without sleeping, without eating, without drinking water, completely absorbed in hearing. And in the audience was Suta, So he's describing what he heard to the sages. Now, these last two verses, he's going to describe, he's going to give an answer to this sixth question of the sages of Naimisharanya. That description is that by the appearance of the Srimad Bhagavatam, by Shukadeva Goswami speaking it, and then in turn Sutta speaking it, and then in turn others who are hearing in disciplic succession speaking it, it's establishing Krishna's presence in this world again. Although he left, he's now appearing again in a literary form. It's a poetic imagery that's being used. The image is with the setting of the sun. That's the Krishna sun. Krishna disappeared. Then the darkness of this age of Kali came, night. But shortly after the setting of the sun on the western horizon came the full moon, as brilliant as the sun, in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, which gives light to the people in this dark age of Kali, who are eager, this is the qualification for receiving the message of the Bhagavatam properly, who are eager to have light. Of course, people that don't like light, they know what to do. They close their eyes or hide in a dark place, just go under a rock and you don't see the sun. Or say, I don't have time, I'm too busy, or I'm not interested, or something like that. Just dismiss it. But those who want light, the eagerness to receive light, it's available through this Srimad Bhagavatam. The imagery is as brilliant as the sun. This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. Puranarko dunoditaha. And it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. So when Krishna left, religion, knowledge, etc. also left. Dharma jnanadibhi. It's like when Ramchandra returned to Ayodhya, he took with him all of his associates, except for one, Hanuman. And when Krishna left, that all the auspiciousness that he, with his whole abode that he brought with him, was gone with him. Except shortly thereafter, he appeared again in this literary form. The Padma Puran, not just the Bhagavatam is glorifying itself, the Padma Puran glorifies the Bhagavatam in exactly the same way. In fact, it details that the 12 cantos of the Bhagavatam correspond with the lotus feet, the parts of the limbs of the Lord's body, until completing his lotus face and his beautiful eyes and his long, beautiful hair. Each of the parts of the Bhagavatam, each of the cantos of the Bhagavatam represent the body, the literary body of the Personality of Godhead. And one who approaches the literary form of the Lord, canto by canto, can have darshan of the Lord. And Prabhupada specifically, in these last two purports, describes seeing the Lord. It's not figurative, but it's literal. One can see the Lord. Here's Prabhupada's language. In other words, if men of this age of Kali want to see the real light of life, they must take to these two books only, Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam is the summum bonum of life. Lord Sri Krishna personified. We must therefore accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the direct representation of Lord Krishna. One who can see Srimad Bhagavatam can also see Lord Sri Krishna in person. They are identical. He says the same thing. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the same thing in the later on in the Bhagavatam. What's the purpose to be achieved through devotional service? Of course, that could have many different answers to it. But what he describes is actually seeing the personality of Godhead. And to actually see the personality in Godhead, one has to be filled with devotion. Because others, like Shishupal, he saw the personality of Godhead. And Kamsa saw the personality of Godhead. And less significant people, like the washerman, when Krishna and Balaram were entering into Mathura, the first person they encountered was the washerman of the king. And there they were, Krishna and Balaram. He should have been in ecstasy. He saw the personality of Godhead face to face. But instead he insulted Krishna. Get out of here. You're lucky King Kamsa hasn't heard what you said. You want some of his clothes? Oh, you'll lose your life. Leave at once, oh village boy. These are not clothes suited for you. They're for the king, Kamsa. He saw the personality of Godhead. And many other persons saw the personality of Godhead, but without the qualification, they saw an ordinary person. Or something like that. They didn't see the personality of Godhead. So, similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Padma Purana and Srimad Bhagavatam and others, other parts of the Vedic literatures, this is the literary form of the Lord for the sage of Kali to give light. To disclose, there's this phrase in Western theology, maybe Christian theology, the phrase is the revealed scripture. The Bible is the revealed scripture. And what revealed scripture, the implication is it's revealing or disclosing God. So that's what revealed scriptures do. That's what they do. They hear God, or at least hears his message. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is disclosing his form, his personality, his qualities, his everything, his name. Prabhupada includes his address. He didn't say his email ID or his cell number, but his how we can reach him, how we can contact him, if we want to. So that's the qualification from our side, and the other is to receive wanting that connection with Krishna. He makes himself accessible. And those who make that connection with Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada just described, they can experience Krishna. I can say this from my own years of reading Srimad Bhagavatam, that my way of saying it is that the Bhagavatam grows on you. It becomes like a companion, like a friend. And it completely changes how you see and how you feel. It just, the perspective becomes in relation to the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. The ordinary events of the day-to-day life you see in relation to the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. You feel Krishna's presence. Just through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's such solace, there's shelter, there's protection. There's a sense of being close to Krishna. You carry Krishna with you just by carrying the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's that kind of literature. I can't think of anything else you can say that about. Certainly not mundane literature, Harry Potter or you know, something. Something popular today. Something popular yesterday. Not Shakespeare. not even classic literature. Certainly not the Western philosophers, Nietzsche and Kant. And there's even the Vedic literature. This is Krishna in person. It was intended. Narada's order to Vyas was composed such a literature that brings one straight to Krishna. No detours, no other. You've already done the other, just exclusively about Krishna. And the last verse of the chapter, text 44. O learned Brahmana, learned Brahmanas, when Shukadev Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Parikshit, I heard him with rapt attention. And thus, by his mercy, I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing I learned from him as I've realized it. So the focus that Prabhupada is expressing in the purport zooms in on rapt attention. And the second thing is hearing in disciplic succession, not hearing from a mercenary person who recites Srimad Bhagavatam because it's a nice way to make a living. And it may not be even so gross as that, but if that's the net effect of someone who's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam as a means of maintaining themselves, then it's a very compromised position. The purity of heart, the purity of consciousness is lost. So, therefore, within these introductory verses of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada expresses this teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam is on the Nivritti Marg. Nivritti means progressively in one's life, one should be aspiring to become less involved in mundane affairs and possessing mundane worldly objects. There's necessities, and those necessities are to be used, accepted and used in service to Krishna. But even those things that we consider necessities, Nivritti says, progressively, as my attachment and attraction for Krishna becomes stronger, what I consider to be necessities diminishes. Purposefully, as a byproduct, but also purposefully. It's like the inversely proportionate thing, or pan scale. When there's more on this side, it goes up on that side. The more deeply one experiences Krishna, the lesser one has even any attraction. I'm sure that you've all experienced this to some degree as you advance in Krishna consciousness or experience Krishna consciousness. Things that were, call them time wasters, you know, frivolous stuff that we all used to do in, you know, abundance. It just, the attraction for those things just subsides. They just fall away because of attraction for sat. That which is asat diminishes, or you make the light brighter and the darkness is less. It just works that way. And on the path of Srimad Bhagavatam, the path of Bhagavad Dharma, one should consciously cultivate both sides, the somehow finding the time in a regular basis to absorb oneself in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the transcendental teachings. And on the other side, think twice, thrice, four times before accumulating more stuff. Now this is like a really bad message for the gross national product, but it's the path of spiritual life. Part of the discussion tomorrow about consumer economics is going to be on this topic anyway. So, but automatically, spiritual well-being, having spiritual connection, the idea of finding shelter in temporary things, it dissipates automatically. So, we should hear the two messages are, we should hear from the right source, and we should hear with rapt attention. And then Prabhupada discusses, so that you can refer to it later, because you'll hear this from time to time as you go along in your Krishna consciousness, that the last verse of chapter 3, canto 1, Prabhupada writes, one should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can realize at once the presence of Lord Krishna in every page of Srimad Bhagavatam. The secret of knowing Krishna, knowing Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioned here. It's an open secret. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. Three sentences. Packed. I'll go back to it, but he says, but somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, rapt attention. The phrase that comes later in the second canto is nirvyalika. Means without pretense. There's nothing else going on but one thing. And that one thing is I want to receive this wonderful association of Krishna through sound vibration. The mixture is because they don't like to suffer. You know, I'm too much disturbed by something or all of the somethings or whatever it is. I want relief. So that's one of the motivations. Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita that pious people surrender unto him when they're in distress. But what happens when the distress is over? See you later, Krishna. It's been nice knowing you. I've got other things I have to do now. Thanks a lot. One takes a vacation from devotional service. There's kind of complacency or lethargy. Until it hurts again. Oh, Krishna! Then you ramp up the attentiveness and prayers and sincerity and then complacency. So this is sankalpa vikalpa. It's from the mind. But devotional service should be from the heart. We understand, at least theoretically, we understand the real function of this human form of life, that which can bring real happiness to the soul, yenatma supersedati, is a loving relationship with Krishna. That loving relationship with Krishna can be accessed directly through this Srimad Bhagavatam, through these pages. It's just a book. I mean, wood and made into pulp, and some minerals used to make ink, and some colors, some dyes. It's material. But if vibrated in the proper way, and heard in the proper way, Krishna appears in the core of one's heart and in every page of the Bhagavatam. One feels Krishna's association. So then there's this purity that kind of, you know, like, gee, it'd be nice if we could get there without all that purity. At University of Mississippi, where I was just yesterday, in the evening discussion, there was one South Indian girl who was speaking about her mother and her mother's fasting and her mother's prayers, and her question was, it was a two-part question. It was, isn't it enough if you just feel the presence of God, you have to do all those things? Are the rituals important if the essence is there? You're feeling God's presence. And the other question was, if it's not mentioned in Bhagavad Gita specifically, because my mother had faith in Bhagavad Gita, if there's not specific mention in Bhagavad Gita about fasting and Friday, I never read anything about fasting on Friday in Bhagavad Gita, and if it's not in Bhagavad Gita, is that really a ritual that you need to do? She wasn't like anti-ritual, she was just wanting to understand how to get to the essence. So rituals aren't the essence. It's not just you fast on Fridays, or you don't, or you fast on something, or you don't, or you perform some ritual, or you don't. And that is not what the essence of spiritual life is. On the other hand, just like Prabhupada's comment here of being pure and eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, these four are animal propensities, and we have to elevate and purify our animal propensities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defense. If they can be brought at least by theistic conduct to the quality of goodness, then that will help us have rapt attention. And the senses are controlled. The mind can be more peaceful. The mind is more peaceful. You can contemplate more deeply on spiritual subject matters. Conversely, if the senses are agitated, the mind is agitated, and you're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, how can you have rapt attention? The answer is you won't. So a regulated life, enhancing the features of the quality of goodness in life, it's good. When Prabhupada introduced Krishna consciousness to Western young people, he didn't start with rules and regulations. That came later when they asked for some rules and regulations. He started with chanting Hare Krishna and dancing. Nice prasadam. And some philosophy. That was my first introduction to Srila Prabhupada. The first time I met Prabhupada at the university where I was attending. It was 2 hours of kirtan and some wild dancing. Intoxicated, you know, with LSD and whatever else people were doing at that time, and speaking 10 minutes and nice prasadam. That was the counterculture youth of my time, and at the center, it was like what we're doing, because there was a little center right across the street from the campus. But what the public program was very, very simple. And how Prabhupada introduced the devotees in general was like I just described. Nice kirtan. You see the pictures of devotees dancing and who knows what intoxication thing that they were looking around. Anyway, chanting, dancing, prasadam, and some philosophy. And after doing that for some time, the devotees finally said, Swamiji, aren't there some restrictions we're supposed to be following? And Prabhupada's answer was, yes, I'll give them to you later. And so the next day, on the bulletin board, in his handwriting, the four regular principles were introduced. So, but here it is in the Bhagavatam, that it's purity in the matter of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Because without that purity in those, in the senses, in the activities of the senses, how can there be purity of mind without purity of mind? How can you have rapt attention? So it's a combination. My point is, drawing from Prabhupada's purport, what we want is the spiritual connection with Krishna, so we accept some regulation of the habits of when we take rest and when we get up and taking our bath and keeping things clean and activities of goodness, regulating our habits, eating only Krishna prasadam, so that this goal of rapt attention will be achieved. And the goal of rapt attention is to connect with Krishna, to receive Krishna and the along with the holy name as he appears in this age as the Yuga Dharma, the chanting of the holy name, but in his literary form also. Proper regard for the both the message itself, the Bhagavatam, the message itself is being glorified within the pages of the Bhagavatam, but also the persons who are representing by their actions and by their speech the message of Bhagavatam. It's for us as the recipients to have that proper regard. I'll just share one other thing and stop. When Prabhupada presented Nectar of Devotion, there's 64 items of devotional service and there's some offenses to be avoided that are identified. And one of the offenses to be avoided, just like in temples today, when we have Mangal Arati in the temple, after Mangal Arati, we close the deity curtain, and then Tulsi Devi appears and we worship Tulsi Devi. Why do we close the curtain before we worship Tulsi Devi? Because we don't worship someone other than Krishna before Krishna. And Prabhupada explained like that. You know, it's right in Nectar Devotion. And yet, he had us, the practice was, we would when Prabhupada was in a temple, he would come before the, he'd go in the morning for his morning walk, come back in time for deity greeting, greet the deities, the Govindam prayers, afterwards take Charanamrita, go sit on the Vyasasan with the deity curtain open, and perform Guru Puja before the deity. And somebody innocently asked Prabhupada, Nectar Devotion, it says this, and you have for having us do that. You know, directly what Nectar Devotion says not to do. How are we to understand this? Prabhupada wanted us to, and it's a good thing he did, to understand how important it is to worship the spiritual master, in his case, as the founder Acharya, not someone imitating him, but he as our founder Acharya, how important it is to have, in Rupa Goswami's language, Guru Padashraya, complete faith in the spiritual master. And because Prabhupada encouraged us, trained us, you know, cultivated in us what we already felt, but established in ritual form, our worship of the spiritual master, the Guru Puja, daily practice in all of our temples, so that in his physical absence we would continue that Guru Puja, and that would be an opportunity for us to improve the shelter taking of that source of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam that we're all receiving, the Bhaktivedanta purports. Because when the heart is open, then you can receive. So these are some nice lessons from the last two verses of Chapter 3 of Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam. See if there's any discussion.
Now that I've heard repeatedly that, you know, even when you even said that in December in Chicago, that about having filters while hearing.
Mm.
So I think I can theoretically accept that I have filters, but what I don't know is what is it that I'm filtering, like what is it that I'm missing out when I'm receiving something.
Take the second one first. What is it that we're filtering out? The filters, by using that metaphor of a filter, we're carrying conceptions of life. According to Bhagavad Gita, everyone carries conceptions of life, just like air carries aroma, those conceptions of life are carried within the mind. So while we're listening to the scripture, what else do we have to listen with but the conceptions? And we're comparing what we're hearing to the conceptions, and we can accept according to the conceptions. And if it's beyond or outside of the conception that we have, how do we process it? Take, you know, you're not this body. Our conception is we're this body. I mean, pinch somebody and they're going to say, ouch. We identify in terms of this body, although we're not this body. And our whole life is geared towards that conception, furthering the body and the extensions of the body in terms of mind, I and mind. That's the material condition. So when we hear we're not this body, or Krishna's form is all spiritual, how do we process that? Because we only know about material forms. So what we're missing out on, which is your question, we're missing out on the spiritual essence. So what to do? We go on hearing with faith and being prepared in this, using this nirvritti language that I spoke of before, being prepared to leave aside this idea of expecting happiness in the material sense of what happiness is through the medium of devotional service. But rather, it's expecting association with Krishna through the medium of devotional service. When we're thinking like that, when that condition is there, then we're no longer hearing with filters. The filters are the material expectations, you know, the I and mine in the material sense. So it's gradual. It's not, okay, tomorrow I'm going to... It's gradual. And then, therefore, Rupa Goswami says, you find this in the introduction to Nectar of Devotion, devotional service is a sort of cultivation. Anukonyena Krishna Anushilana is the phrase, but it's a cultivation. So how to apply what you just described you heard in December is, okay, obviously it's not a very difficult admission, I'm not experiencing Krishna at every moment. I can, you know, very safe to say, I'm not there. And what's preventing me is, although I'm hearing the holy name, and I'm seeing the deity form, and I'm hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm not experiencing Krishna at every moment, or at any moment. So, I'm hearing with filters. I'm seeing with, you know, material vision. That's my condition. Now I have faith in the process of hearing, and let me take up the process of hearing more carefully and look at the ways in which I can take up the process of hearing more carefully. One of which is your first question, being pure in our habits. So the purity in the habit of defending. What are the teachings? Just step back and consider. What teachings do we have in for our life as practicing? We're trying to become Vaishnavas. What's the practice that we're being told to cultivate? What are some of the things that we defend ourselves against when we're like not devotees or very neophyte devotees? One of the things that we're all very busy defending is our honor. Pride. We want people to think good about us, and we don't want people to think something other about us, and we hear somebody thinks or says or does something against us, whoa, we bristle, because that's our defense mechanism. Just getting prompted. So one instruction that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, like a ABC primer, is you tolerate. Like you tolerate the winter and summer seasons, you tolerate honor and dishonor. Like you don't make a big deal about it. You tolerate it. It's just the passing phases of time brings winter, and then winter passes, and it becomes summer. With the passing phases of time, honor will come. Wait a while. Dishonor will come. Wait a while. Dishonor will pass, and honor will come. We don't invest consciousness in the temporal, we invest consciousness in sat. That's a beginning spiritual or pure way of, we don't place consciousness in temporary things that have to do with, you know, honor and dishonor and pride. Devoid of all sense of false prestige. How can you withdraw? How can you? What's the antidote for pride? Having a spiritual conception, because otherwise it's just putting something on the other side of the pan scale. Having a spiritual conception, actually understanding it has nothing to do with me. What has to do with me is I have some service to Krishna. So if I'm going to deal with some situation that has to do with honor or dishonor, I really want to, I'm determined to have anything to do with any of that only insofar as it has something to do with serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna, not in terms of, you know, I and mine. And let's say the bodily kind of defending. Now, in an extreme case, there's Maharaj Ambarish. We're not on the platform of Maharaj Ambarish. Here comes this fiery demon, you just stand there, saying, I deserve this because I offended Durvasa Muni. So we'll take precaution. You know, like this phrase, drive defensively. When you're on the highway and it's New Year's Eve, you drive defensively, or don't drive, because people are... I saw it just the other day, somebody, you were coming from a program at night, it was a Saturday night, and this guy was walking along the street, and he couldn't even find the sidewalk. I mean, he was staggering all over the place, looking for the sidewalk, or looking for I don't know what, but he was really drunk. And I was thinking, there's people on the highway like this too. So drive defensively means you're taking precautions so that others won't do something hurtful to themselves or to you. But that's let it be done in the mood of service. So the way that you can purify, from a Krishna conscious perspective, the activity of defending is just a service to Krishna. And then there's grace or finesse along with the act of defending. You do it in the right way. In a nutshell, in a little like short statement, defending impurity is whatever it is that you do, it's just somehow is done so that Krishna will be pleased, and otherwise not at all. There's certainly needs to be a sense of Krishna will protect me if I do that. I'll share a little what's coming to mind, a little example right here at Penn State. I can't remember how it happened, but one time I came to, what's it called, the hub? And I had a book table. You arranged it? Someone arranged it. So through the Vedic Society, they scheduled the table, and I had a book table set up in the hub. And right next to me was a Christian group, and you know, a whole bunch of other people doing a whole bunch of other things. And a whole full display of books on the table. And just sitting there, being peaceful. And one young man came along and had this energy like he was going to say something challenging, but he didn't say anything. He just looked at me, looked at the books, looked around, looked at me, looked at the books, put his hands under the table, and then suddenly flipped the whole table. And all the books went flying in all directions. And said something like, accept Jesus as your savior or you're going to hell, or something like that, and walked off. And the people right next to me at the Christian table They looked at me like, what's he going to do? And I just, I didn't react. Just could understand the person has a problem. And one of them immediately got down on the floor and started helping me pick up the books, and the other one went running after the fellow saying, this is not at all Christian. I'm going to report you to the dean. This is, they were protecting me. And they put the books in back on the table, helped me, and said, we're really sorry, and this is not at all what the teaching, these people that do this, it just reflects so badly on what real Christianity is, and I'm so sorry. I just was undisturbed through the whole thing. I could have, I had a sense that I didn't know exactly what he was going to do, but I knew it was going to be something ridiculous, something challenging and nasty, because that was his demeanor. What do challenging and nasty people do? They do challenging and nasty things. So now, what about purity of defense? Even better, that these people next to me, they did the devotional service of, reporting him to the dean. I want that guy's name and I want to report him to the dean. I'm going to fix his wagon. They did it. And even if they didn't do it, that was their spirit. I know him. I know who he is. He's like this all the time. He's a mean person. So whatever, it's not one thing is appropriate in all circumstances, but if you're depending upon Krishna, then what's appropriate, what's an act of purity in the act of defense, Krishna will indicate. Sometimes it's appropriate to speak something. Sometimes it's appropriate to shout something. Sometimes it's appropriate to say nothing. But let it come from a place where there's some indication that you have that Krishna is prompting, this is appropriate. It's not just reacting, but responding to Krishna. I remember one time we were coming back from distributing books and having Harinam at a concert. I think it was at Madison Square Garden or Central Park or something like that. And there was one devotee who was a nice devotee but a little spaced out. His name was Satrajit. And he got on the wrong platform. We were all going downtown and he went on the uptown, the other side of the platform. And a train passed. And so he was separated from all the rest of us, and we had these Lakshmi bags around. So we couldn't hear because the train was roaring, just rumbling by. But somebody, a mugger, came and wanted to take his money. And he screamed, Nisringadev, 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 so loud. The guy ran and left. Just take shelter of... In that case, that worked. It was... Nisringadev protected him. But there's all kinds of different circumstances, but if the core of our consciousness is depending upon Krishna, then we'll take shelter of purity of defense. And what's appropriate. Yes. Hi, Krishna. Thank you all for coming and joining in.
I have this question of, I had heard previously on how we are at least nice, how devotion is there, devotion probably is there, and attachment is there. So
material attachment, maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
Material attachment. And then today we were hearing on that if we read Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita, we can see Krishna there. But of course, I'm not able to see that. So, how do we get over this material? It seems to me that material attachment needs to be there, but somehow the devotion.
This is what your question is our topic. I mean, the topic is the tight grip of material attachment needs to become slackened. And the means of slackening material attachment is through the medium of hearing. And to improve the quality of hearing up to the rapt attention, we need to become purity in our actions. We have to have purity in the mind. We strive for that so that we can hear more effectively, so we can chant effectively. We can read Srimad Bhagavatam and see Krishna. So, purity in our actions. So, you can one simple way of saying is very strictly following. And it's not just the following, it's the spirit of the following. It's the spirit of following. Following the path, following the example of elevated souls. That's anukoyena krishna anushilana. Anushilana. Following the shilana, the behavior of elevated souls. And that's how we become, how you get the slackening of the material attachment side. By that association. By spiritual association. And quality spiritual association, make it more and more quality. So, through association, we become relieved of our material condition. The iron rod and the fire example. Sangat sanjayate kama. Prabhupada borrowed that phrase from Bhagavad Gita to say, to express that by the quality of the association that we have, it will impact our desire. Sangat sanjayate kama. So that the kama says attachment to material things, improve the quality of spiritual association. So that means, you know, how you serve one another. So this thing about, you know, Vaishnava relationships. I was asked to speak something about Vaishnava relationships, but so I didn't have to plan it because it's going to come up anyways. It's so important. We have the opportunity to serve and assist one another. First of all, we need to ourselves be quality association, at least strive like that. And that's part of how we can associate better. If we become more fixed in our own practices and commitments of spiritual life. But to just take your question and go back to the frame of reference, because the Bhagavatam wants for people of this age of Kali to get light. So, all of what I just said is like there's a holistic approach to Krishna consciousness. It's not one thing approach to Krishna consciousness. If there's one thing, it's the holy name, and everything flows from the holy name. How we chant the holy name. And how we chant the holy name and how we hear the Bhagavatam has everything to do with how we have proper, the proper regard that we have, to a degree that we have proper regard for those who are representatives of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the sadhus. How do we deal with that feature? Right from the first chapter. And then the fourth chapter, and then the fifth chapter, and throughout the first canto. Elevation comes through association with sadhu. And how do we receive a sadhu? Who is a sadhu? How do we interact? And avoid offenses, but properly receive. And then receive that message because our heart is open. And then the attachment slackens. The chicken and the egg question. Okay, I'll follow the exact language that you use, because it's not how do you get, but how do you cultivate. The assumption is that there's some eagerness, because otherwise, any one of us, we'd be somewhere else. There's something there. So, refer back to the purport, and try to frame our life, put it in simple language, try to frame our life in qualities of goodness, so that you can incubate that desire, that eagerness, better. So, in other words, like even little things, clean, you know, especially the bachelors over here on this side. You know, it's notorious that college students are not clean, college men. I don't know about women, but so the devotee needs to not be like that. To cultivate eagerness to reach Krishna, cleanliness, regulation, features of goodness, compassion, truthfulness. You know, even in little things that we say, in little things that we do, the quality of, enhance the quality of goodness in just the character of how we address our lives, because that will help incubate or grow or nurture the spiritual objective. And the spiritual objective directly can be enhanced, the eagerness, by when there is some opportunity to hear. You know, make it's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, just like a little, this is a little japa tip, and that is at the end of your day, so you can try this tonight when you take rest, as you're preparing to take rest. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's very helpful to do three things: to review what went well in my day of devotional service. You know, count my blessings, that Krishna has been kind, like a little internalization of gratitude. Then another is, what are the areas that I didn't perform so well in today? And then the third is preparing in the mind to greet the next day, to improve upon those things that I could have done better if I was more attentive. And specifically, the tomorrow morning is another opportunity to chant the holy name and become lifted to the transcendental platform. Prepare in the mind to greet the next day. So that's a cultivation of quality of eagerness, specifically to connect with the holy name. Eagerly, I'm anticipating, oh, tomorrow, another opportunity to directly associate with Krishna. And if the mind is anticipating like that, you'll find that thought is in the mind when you wake up. And it'll be much easier to get up when the alarm goes off and run to the shower and run to the japa bag and chant the holy name and Krishna's association. So it's part of the cultivation is preparation. the anticipation itself. Another is just what you're doing by asking the question. You know, the inquisitive spirit helps to keep you on the spiritual edge. To say it the other way around, if the inquisitive spirit has slackened, very quickly one becomes covered and jaded. The business as usual kicks in. The no change, humdrum complacency, I'm doing a duty, and that's good. And, you know, enthusiasm fades. And a final thing, this is, I'm giving you a more elaborate answer than, same question was asked in Chicago in a temple amongst, you know, group of temple brahmacharis. The question was, when we hear very exciting messages and get really great association, we're charged up, very enthusiastic, and something happens. How do you stay very determined, very enthusiastic? The answer, I gave a simple answer, which is there's many things. But most important is those sources where you're getting inspiration in your Krishna consciousness, make those sources of inspiration very strong. The persons from whom that you're receiving, or the activities that, like, let's say somebody may really like bhajan, they really like kirtan. So connect with that. And somebody I know, when they read Srimad Bhagavatam for an hour or two a day, they're transcendental. If they don't, they have a hard time. They'll connect with that source that gives you inspiration. And particularly the persons, because that's the message here. Suta Goswami is claiming nothing for himself. He's claiming only that Shukadeva Goswami was very merciful. He allowed him to hear, and from hearing from him he assimilated, and now he's ready to serve Shukadeva Goswami by expressing the same. So strong connections, strong relationships with the persons and the activities that give you strength in Krishna consciousness. And then from that strength you can borrow to do the other things that you need to do to stay strong in this eagerness aspect. Yeah?
And that's following up on the same topic of eagerness. Last week, in Penn State, we had Bill Clinton coming campaigning for Hillary.
Really?
We also had Obama coming on Sunday.
Oh.
That time I saw students, and I did not see it, but I saw pictures of students who were really super enthusiastic and super eager to meet Bill Clinton and Obama, because they knew that Bill Clinton was an ex-president and he's campaigning for Hillary, and Obama could be a potential president. So basically they knew, they understood the value of the opposite person, at the same time what he could offer. But when I really introspected myself and when I compared myself to this students in a Krishna conscious context, I realized that as compared to the enthusiasm which they have to see their
worshipable deity,
I don't share this like similar enthusiasm to hear from a pure devotee or in Krishna consciousness. So for me, the introspection was moreover is because I don't really understand what Krishna consciousness is and what a pure devotee has to offer. So for me, like, if I really understand the value of Krishna consciousness, then eagerness, enthusiasm, patience, and, you know, all that is required would follow.
So this goes back to Vidya's question. You know, the phrase, A phrase that I use like over and over and over and over and over, or a refrain, is it's essential to have a spiritual conception. It's another way of saying what you said. If I really understood, then you have a spiritual conception. Now back to her question, but we're hearing with filters. If those filters are, you know, going to his question, we have attachments for an idea that I'm an enjoyer of worldly facility, and the measure of my Krishna conscious advancement is how I'm enjoying. You know, we're not on the platform of Queen Kunti and, you know, elevated devotees, Prahlad Maharaj, and devotees that, for them, they have no problem. Prahlad was very eager when Varna Shringadeva came. And very eager when Lord Shringadeva gave him benediction. It was, I just want association with Narada. So through Narada, I can understand how to serve you better. Just because the phrase fits, having that spiritual conception, it doesn't come just fall from the sky. It comes from a spiritual effort. And it's the two things, spiritual effort and receiving mercy. But mercy will be there if we make some effort. The mercy bestowers are very eager to bestow mercy. We're just not so eager to receive it. Which is, you know, his question. You know, they got their material side and they got some spiritual inclination over there somewhere. How do you make that spiritual inclination stronger? It's on the same, all these questions are on the same theme. The according to Rupa Goswami, on this point of eagerness, the whole chapter, eligibility of a candidate for devotional service, it's eagerness. And taken to an extreme degree, and it's greed. Excessive eagerness. Too much eagerness. Greedy. And greedy for what? For the spiritual platform. Greedy for being with Krishna. Okay, somebody wants to be with Bill Clinton, somebody wants to be with Obama, and somebody wants to be with Krishna. And I don't have that greediness to be with Krishna. So I feel this attraction and repulsion from material sense objects. I'm still on the material platform because I don't have this sufficient eagerness. So let me focus on the eagerness part. And, you know, how to cultivate it. So the opportunities are there. Therefore, I expressed, let's say it again, this Bhagavat Marg is a path of nivritti. We're to progressively diminish our material involvements. And the hankering for a standard of success in my life is more stuff. More honor, more wealth, more position, more. Or better, at least, not more. We're infected. We have this disease, material existence disease. We have the opportunity of spiritual association. We're just afflicted with this material disease. So that's, therefore Prabhupada says the process is gradual. Doesn't have to be gradual. At once, Kanfunga Maharaj, at once, Shukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Pariksit, at once. But it was a lifetime of cultivation also. So be very clear, going back to Vijay's question, what's the goal? And even when we hear what the goal is, we're hearing with filters. It's unavoidable because we have our material conceptions. We have our false ego. We have our expectation of enjoying apart from Krishna. Although we have the spiritual side that says in relation to Krishna. We have this other thing going on that we're addicted to. So it's gradual. So then how to remain like eager to hear? Associate with those that are eager to hear. Look at Sudevi. You know, every time I come, she's here. What does that show? She's a good person to associate with. She's eager to hear. And she's passing it on to her son, who's trying to become eager to hear. So find those devotees that have that eagerness and stand next to them. Associate with them. Serve them. Inquire confidentially. How do you sustain your eagerness? Like, you know, and it just doesn't have to be, you know, when some sannyasi comes. It's the devotees have that eagerness too. Little pitch for one of the things that Prabhupada, a pitch for book distribution. Because one of the things that all of you all are missing, that Sudevi and I are not missing, is for years we distributed books. And there's something about that activity of distributing, that austerity of approaching people that, you know, they didn't get up in the morning thinking, I hope I meet a Hare Krishna devotee who can give me a book. I really hope so. But, you know, just day after day after day after day and year after year, just abiding by that desire. We had at our GBC meeting, the first day of our GBC meeting, was the BBT. They could do whatever they wanted in 4 hours, and they did. And have some nice notes, and they've done some wonderful things, but 1 hour was dedicated to bringing a collection of book distributors, you know, for 18 years, 26 years, 19 years, just distributing books in different ways, in different continents, in different countries. And there was like this light in the front of the room, and you know, very deep realizations. Not even that, like, not necessarily highly educated, sophisticated language, but their expressions were very, very deep, very pure. There's something to that, to sustain and just get rid of so much other stuff, material conception stuff, with dedicating oneself in a very practical way to fulfilling the mission of the spiritual master, putting other things to the side and just fulfilling the mission of the spiritual master. Very, 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 very purifying. And I can say, probably, you know, Sudevi as well as myself, it was completely against our nature. We're both quiet people, a little bit even shy. But why do we do what we did? Just sacrifice. But that's how the Hare Krishna movement was built. And there was a strength and a purity and a dynamism that isn't the same today. And one of the reasons, this is one of the contributing reasons. So it's one of the things that I think is very, very valuable as the young Indian professionals are more and more taking interest in Krishna consciousness to figure out a way, individually and or collectively, to take the mission. The form of it is less important. The spirit of it is what's important. Take the mission of Krishna consciousness and put it in the forefront somehow, even you have careers and families and things. Somehow. And when that comes, I suggest that the eagerness will to hear, and the eagerness to take association when it comes, will become stronger. This is the main thing that I brought back with me from our GBC meeting. And that we spent 10 days doing stuff. And that was the most important thing out of the whole. And I'll say it in another way. Bhakti Chuswami, some of you know already, if you don't know, he had a heart attack or had severe heart problem and was hospitalized. Now, you know, they blocked arteries and two on the left side, one on the right side. The one on the right side was the problem. It was minor and he's okay. Didn't have an angioplasty. They thought he was going to have to. And so he just wrote something today that's right on what I just said. Now, he's like a message from, I had a brush with death and here's my message. We need to organize ourselves in such a way that the mission the Prabhupada wanted us to carry forward gets carried forward. It's the mission of Prabhupada, is the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And, you know, every town and village. And there's so much sacrifice to do this. You know, you're all making sacrifice. It's not like, hey guys, you're not sacrificing enough. But, you know, to spiritualize it, put the mission of a pure devotee right at the heart of that sacrifice that you're making. It'll spiritualize, give you strength, eagerness to hear. You know, then you're moving. How much did Prabhupada sacrifice for us? And so there was potency, because there was purity. And that's what we were speaking about, purity. You know, spiritualize the things that we do in life. Bring purity to the things that we do. So that's, maybe I'm speaking too high. Maybe I'm speaking to you and I'm losing some of the other people. But that I feel very strongly about it. Missionary, the taking, having the will that Prabhupada wanted to give to us and to have us share with others. There's one class I remember in Henry Street in Brooklyn. It was a really hot July summer day, but you know, we're just absorbed in what Prabhupada was saying. So at one point he said, my spiritual master Bhakti Siddhanta Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa, Bhakti Siddhanta found me in a dark place and he made me fortunate. And everyone went, Jai Prabhupada. And he instructed me to go to the English-speaking parts of the world and make all of you fortunate, and so I have come. Jai Prabhupada. And now I am instructing all of you. He knew what he was going to say. Now you go forward and make others fortunate. Jai Prabhupada. And it was, you know, it was such a simple statement, but that was our mission, to receive and to share. And it's for everybody. not, you know, it's not only this ashram or that ashram, or people that live at this address where there's a temple and not where there's... It's a mission. Receive this gift and extend opportunities to others to receive the same gift. Then there's that, you know, that's the eagerness enhancer. I want to know what the gift is. I really want to receive the real thing, not like, you know, the filtered version. Anyway, those are some thoughts.
Could you say something in the collection? On go to me, my day. Three devotees came home with an Ali and had Hari Ram as a university, and Venkat, and Sureta, and another Mahatma came and joined us. And it was a very nice view, almost about 30 of us, including other children. And he gave us some books and bunch of
books
and people to share on. And actually, he had been done for on a previous husband.
Yeah.
He was just supposed to drop us and just go somewhere else. But all the chanting and giving our books, he was so inspired and happy. And he took me, this one wanted to go for here. For here. And he was like, really happy. And he said, you have to do this again. And you have to have a display of books. He was so inspired and happy. And he said, you know, that's very long, but 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
Now they're going to come more because the weather is nice.
Weather's nice.
And I'm lovely when you're coming again.
Very nice. Very nice. It's life. There's enthusiasm. And you don't have to wait for Yadunanda and Sudevi and Mother Taruni to come. You all can. I'm inspired. I don't want to say something to put you in a feeling uncomfortable or something like that. Somehow or another, though, if this can lift the capture within the heart and carry that excitement, it's uplifting. Cares and problems and worries and stuff and troubles and material energy is always going to keep doing its thing. There's an antidote, the spiritual energy. And catch a hold of that spiritual energy and it feeds more of the same. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
I have some questions, but I don't know if you have time.
Well, why don't you try one at a time?
First, I want to correct what Mataji said. I came there, but then I was there for very little time because I got so conscious that I was standing in front of my school and, you know, I couldn't do it wholeheartedly, so I went back. So please don't think that I came very happy. I wanted to come, but then that was the first time I stood in front of everybody and started chanting, and I was scared my advisor would see me or something, so I just went back. So I hope I can do better next time. Thank you. Okay, I think 3 or 4 questions, but
just one at a time.
Okay. First thing is in connection with the eagerness. I would like to ask the question as a student. We have schoolwork and we have spiritual life. We have a spiritual master, we have an advisor. We have to publish papers, we have to become Krishna conscious. And it's running parallelly, and both sides, you're so occupied, you really want to give in time, and you really want to become more Krishna conscious, but then there's so much to do, there's so much of...
Well, that's true for any one of us here. It's not just, you know, students. I don't have student work to do. I have so many other things to do. I'm committed to find the time to do what I'm doing right now, because it needs to be done. When I'm doing other things that aren't doing what I really want to do, like what I'm doing right now, the essence is to do it in the right spirit, to do it in a Krishna conscious way. So here's the challenge. It's not like the word that's used sometimes is, how do you balance the two? And I say it's not a question of balance, it's a question of consciousness. When you're chanting, you're chanting. When you're reading, you're reading. When you're doing your academic work, you're doing your academic work, and all of them are done for Krishna. You do in blocks of time, time management in blocks of time, you do things in blocks of time. And when you're doing those things, you do it with full attention because it's for Krishna. And when you do something with full attention because it's for Krishna, my experience is it takes less time and it comes out better. Rather than while you're doing the academic work, you're thinking, oh, but I'm not doing this other thing. And while you're doing your devotional practice, you're thinking, oh, but I'm not doing my academic work. So you're neither fully present in either case. And when you're with somebody, you're worried about both. You're not with the person either. So, blocks of time. When you're doing each thing, you do it with full attention. Because it's service to Krishna. It's not, you're not serving your supervisor. You're serving Krishna. The supervisor thinks you're serving him. You're thinking, I'm serving Krishna. At least I'm trying to learn how, through the medium of this, this is service to Krishna. Because that's who we are. Constitutionally, we're servants of Krishna. We're not servants of supervisors. We're servants of Krishna. How to cultivate that will very much depend upon how you chant your rounds. If you're chanting your rounds thinking, oh, my supervisor, and oh, my, you know, my schedule, and oh, I have so many things to do, then you're not attentive to chanting. You're not with Krishna. Be present with Krishna when you're chanting. Feel Krishna's, be present with Krishna, with his holy name. And that strength will give you strength in all other departments of life. Each thing. So then you, when you make your schedule, you're deciding how much in this block of time and how much in that block of time, and you can adjust it. But when you're doing it, once you've made the schedule and you're doing it, you're fully present. And you're doing it for Krishna. It's in such a way that it will enhance your service to Krishna somehow. And you can fill in the somehow in various ways, depending upon the activity. And also depending upon your state of Krishna consciousness, how evolved your Krishna consciousness is. And practice now, because life doesn't get more simple. Life has a way of getting more complex. So learn principle. Now you don't have too many things. You listed two major categories of things with subcategories. But then, you know, later in life there's more categories, more complexity. So learn the principle. Each thing, be present. When you're with, you're associating with devotees, you're associating with the devotees. You're with, and you're doing your academic, you're doing your chanting. And the strength for all of that will come from chanting. And as discussed earlier, from the primary relationships that are connecting you to Krishna. Make those relationships very strong. And that will give you strength in all the other things. The chanting, and when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's a long explanation. There's five primary activities, according to Rupa Goswami, that are most powerful. If doing them without offense, they can bring one to the stage, any one of them can bring one immediately to the stage of bhava bhakti. That's up there. So, of those five, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated these two that are most important are chanting the holy name and serving the devotees. So there's different ways of serving the devotees or being with the devotees, including what we're doing right now. Okay, then you go to your academic work. Oh, gee, I'm not serving the devotees. But if you're doing your academic work in the proper way, you are also serving instructions given that you've heard. And gaining realization from Krishna's reciprocation from carrying that instruction out, that you're understanding Krishna's helping you, Krishna's presence, how your service to Krishna will be enhanced by doing this nicely. The realization will come, and in each one of it's going to be a little different. I'm a little concerned about time. I'll let you ask one more question, and then we'll end.
Okay, this question is a little related to the relationships we are telling, and also it's connected to all the questions.
Okay.
During devotional service, we have a lot of obstacles, and we can just go one by one. And for me, if I am here today sitting, it's because of the love and relationships that I saw in this community. But what I feel is that I'm only taking, I'm not giving anything back. Two, I cannot see myself continuing Krishna consciousness without the association of these devotees. And I know that in the future it's temporary, it's not going to be permanent. But I cannot, because for me I can learn only from examples, and I look at people as examples.
Well, you should trust that Krishna will provide you with other opportunities in other situations. And in some cases, it may be that you have to create that association. You know, sometimes these some devotees have that service. But what you have, the resources that you have, where did they come from? They came from Krishna's mercy. And if you move to situation B instead of situation A, Krishna's mercy is dried up, or Krishna's mercy will still flow. Krishna is merciful, A or B. So that's what the dependency is upon. Krishna's mercy, which manifests in the form of these devotees. Now, as far as giving, if there is gratitude, there's a medium for giving. When there's genuine gratitude, expression will follow. And that expression doesn't have to be some big deal. It can be something very, very simple. Whatever that simple is. Just like Sue Davy's expression to you, which you felt was, you know, wasn't as at all as genuine as she thought, but see how that enlivened her. There's a giving. And in little ways, the emphasis I'm making here is genuine. And your response to her is, it wasn't genuine, I was like nervous. I wasn't even fully present, and then I ran away. Okay, but now I know what Sue Devi, how I can give to Sue Devi. I'll try to be there next time, and I'll try to be more present. Like that. It doesn't have to be a big one. And you can enliven another devotee by that genuine expression. That's having received, now you're giving. And as you mature and grow in Krishna consciousness, there'll be other ways in which you can do that. And it's all, what's important is not the what, it's the sincerity. The sense of gratitude, and when that is in the heart, it'll come out. And the devotees that are giving to you, do you think that they're keeping score? I don't think they're keeping score. I've given 17 times and you haven't given back once yet. It's love. When someone is giving, it's an expression of love. And if you're from your side, oh no, then it's blocking a loving exchange. Don't do that. Because then when you're receiving a gesture of love, then there's a sense of gratitude, and then you'll want to extend something back. And even if it's just what you're doing right now, like saying, oh gee, it will find a means of expression. I'll end with this. As a college student, this is autobiography. As a college student, I had an experience, like a little realization. The little realization was where I was living. I was living with a group of people, and we decided we didn't want to live in the city around the congested university area. So we rented a farmhouse outside the city. And there were about 8 of us living in this big old farmhouse. And that was where I began chanting and doing a zillion other things. But part of what I was doing was I took a long japa walk every day. And behind the big old farmhouse was a big old farm field. And behind the farm field was these line of trees and a creek and more trees. And just one day I just kept going and going and going. And I was so absorbed in chanting, I didn't even know where I was. I mean, it was just chanting, just the holy name. It was wonderful. And then all of a sudden, I hit the other side of the clearing of trees, and there was the skyline of the city. And all of a sudden it clicked that Prabhupada took me out of that, gave me the holy name, and gave me an experience of associating with Krishna. And what he underwent to do that for me, I have to give back. It was like all of a sudden, just this flash of this flood of this strong impression, realization. And my mindset at the time was, I was in a spirit of rebellion. It was part of the times I was in. But yeah, I wanted to practice Krishna consciousness, but in my own way, on my own. I was, that kind of a product of my times. But the realization was that that's not right. Prabhupada created a society of devotees so that persons like me could have this gift. So I had to give back. It's not like it wasn't begrudging. I wasn't told I had to. It was just coming. And that brought me to, throughout my whole life as a devotee for 30-something years, I've always had this, I want to give back to Prabhupada. In the form of book distribution, but specifically visiting colleges and helping college students like myself have an opportunity to receive this message. And to do that, there's a lot of sacrifice. I mean, it's a lot of sacrifice. But it's not, it's giving back to Prabhupada. So you can say, or someone might say, so much trouble. But it's love. What's the trouble in a loving relationship? Turn it the other way around. Don't have a loving relationship, that's trouble. That's something unwanted. And whatever there is in the way of a loving relationship, that's wanted. So recognize that something is being given. You know, Prabhupada's mercy is coming into all of your lives as much as you want it. And now, let that connect. So how can I do something to help fulfill and express my gratitude? How can I possibly repay? But then you take action. And it'll flow when there's that sincere, genuine desire is there. I can say, you know, to a degree it's conscious, but to a larger degree it's just coming because it's just a sense of gratitude to Prabhupada. And then actions flow. And Krishna gives intelligence how to do, and so on and so on and so on. And there's success, and there's obstacles, and there's failure, and there's problems, and it's all okay. I came back from Oxford, Mississippi yesterday, and the comedy of errors ended up with the plane flying from Memphis running out of fuel because it had to circle around because of the big storm last night, and we landed in Allentown to refuel. And I was thinking, gee, if I could get my bag off this plane, I'd just go to Penn State. But I got back at the temple at 2 o'clock, 2:30. We arrived at the airport at 2 o'clock and the temple at 2:30, and took rest at 2:45. Got up in the morning after 4 hours of sleep, and you know, packed my bag and talked to the president for a bit, and got on the train, came out here to do more of the same. Why? Gratitude. And gratitude is the beginning of love. It's then you don't do things because it's duty. I'm supposed to do this. Just like hearing Sudevi. It's like she's not wanting to come again because she's supposed to do it. She's feeling happiness. And she's happy seeing others getting that happiness. And Krishna's given her a situation in her life where she can do it. So she's, you know, happy to give. And there are ways to give. Anyway. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.